We do not have a quorum yet, so we're not officially in business, but we would like to begin in the interest of time, and others will be joining us soon. There are a lot of members who have bills and things that are causing them to be a little late here today. So I think we'll start by having our presentation on autism. And Amy, is that?
Sure, yes.
Yes, would you again officially introduce yourself and then proceed?
I will. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to come this afternoon and to provide to you an overview of research focused on autism and autism spectrum disorders that are happening at the University of Minnesota. My name's Amy Hewitt, and I'm a senior research associate at the university's Institute on Community Integration. This institute is housed in the College of Education and Human Development, and it is a member of a network of 67 centers like ours across the United States called the University Centers on Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. Our role is to provide pre-service training, research, and outreach in the areas of developmental disabilities, which includes autism spectrum disorders. The term autism encompasses a range of behaviorally defined conditions that include autism disorder or autism, Asperger's disorder or pervasive developmental disability, developmental disorder. ASD is characterized by qualitative impairments in communication and social interaction, as well as restricted, repetitive, and stereotypical patterns of behavior. Currently, the Centers for Disease Control estimate the prevalence of ASD to be 1 in 110, and it is autism spectrum disorders that I'm speaking of today in terms of research activities at the University of Minnesota. I would say the University of Minnesota has an emerging active program of research on the Twin Cities campus. My goal this morning is to provide you with a broad overview of the types of research activities that researchers are engaged in on our campus. I've provided the committee members with a handout that lists many of these projects and a handout that describes one project in significant detail. I think it's important to share with you that as an individual researcher on campus, I'm not able to report to you an all-inclusive summary of all of the research activities going on at the University of Minnesota related to autism spectrum disorders, but I am able to share with you those that I'm aware of and those that the research community that I collaborate with are engaged in and those we could reach out and find out about. We have an active ASD research program happening across a number of colleges and academic units within the University of Minnesota. And I think it's important to share some of these with you and also to point out that much of our research is interdisciplinary in nature and crosses a number of academic units on campus. But to name those that I'm aware of, these include the Academic Health Center, within that, the Department of Pediatrics and Department of Psychiatry, the College of Education and Human Development, including the Departments of Educational Psychology, Social Work, and the Institute on Community Integration, the College of Liberal Arts, which includes research being conducted in speech, language, and hearing sciences, as well as the Department of Psychology. I'm also aware of other departments that are pursuing partnerships and have reached out in a collaborative to pursue collaborative opportunities such as the School of Public Health. The research that's being conducted at the University of Minnesota today includes research that focuses on a wide variety of topics and areas of interest. Some of these include social communication in preschoolers with autism spectrum disorders, treatment models for children and families of preschoolers with autism spectrum disorders, Medicaid policy related to access of services across the United States, outcomes of Medicaid programs funded for youth and adults with autism and autism spectrum disorders, early brain development, metabolic profiling, early detection of ASD and autism, and ASD prevalence. Our research program...
Can I interrupt for just one brief moment here? We do have a quorum now, so I'd like to officially call the meeting of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. And to get one bit of business out of the way, we'd also like to have someone move the minutes from the 13th of March. Representative Rokovina is moving the minutes. I understand. Any corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. Okay. Sorry to interrupt, but now we're officially in business. So, again, resume.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our research program is funded and is relatively new and small compared to other universities that are much more renowned for their ASD research. So we've gotten into ASD research a little bit later than a lot of other universities, but have made steady progress. Some of the major research institutions around ASD research are programs such as that at Johns Hopkins University, University of North Carolina, UC Davis, University of Washington, and Yale. These programs have been well-funded and have existed for over 30 years in terms of their study of ASD. We also have a program that probably is larger. We have more research going on than a number of universities across the United States. So again, I think ours is could easily be summarized as emerging and active. The Autism Initiative, which is a program within the Minnesota Medical Foundation, was developed with private funding in large part to serve as a method for seeding research at the University of Minnesota. You can't just all of a sudden one day start a program of ASD research. You have to have resource to fund it, and you have to have researchers who are competitive at getting grants. And so seeding smaller projects of research is one active strategy. Some of the research going on at the University of Minnesota are funded by this Autism Initiative and are projects that are given to new investigators as well as established investigators. Other funding sources of our ASD research on campus include funding from the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institute of Health, the Maternal and Child Health Bureau, the Administration on Developmental Disabilities, the Institute of Education Sciences, Autism Speaks, and the National Institute on Rehabilitation Research. These are all federal agencies that fund much of the research that is occurring on our campus. One newly funded study on campus is the Autism Surveillance Project in the Somali community. This project is getting much attention because of the concern that there may be a higher prevalence of ASD within this population and because of the strong advocacy voice in the Somali community. The goals of this project are to determine whether there are true differences in autism spectrum disorders population prevalence between Somali and non-Somali children. The question to be answered is there higher prevalence of autism in Somali versus non-Somali children who live in Minneapolis? The project period was funded from July 1, 2011 to June 30, 2012. We have asked for a continuation for this research and have not yet received a confirmation of the approval. We anticipate initial results by the end of 2012 and our final results by early 2013. This ambitious project aims to carry out the CDC public health surveillance methods for ASD and to verify the ASD case status based on direct clinical evaluation. The children involved in this study range in age from 7 to 9 years old, and one of their parents had to be a resident in the city of Minneapolis in 2010. This study involves a number of activities and components. The methods used in the project are to conduct scientific surveillance activities using the same methods that are used by the Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Network, known as the ADAM Network. Those used for case verification process were developed in collaboration between the research team at the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota Department of Health, and the Centers for Disease Control. There really are three major components to this study. The first study, the first phase is the phase that we're in right now, which is really the surveillance activities. And this is involving a review and abstraction of school and medical records for children with ASD symptoms or an educational label of autism or autism spectrum disorders to identify possible ASD surveillance cases. Following that, a clinician from the CDC will review a summary of these children's records to confirm whether or not they meet the CDC's surveillance criteria as having a confirmed ASD surveillance, being considered a confirmed ASD surveillance case. And then the final phase is a verification phase, which is the evaluation of a select group of children identified through the surveillance activities as having ASD, and verifying through a medical comprehensive diagnosis whether they do in fact meet the criteria for an ASD diagnosis. Additionally, we will be looking at a group of typically developing Somali children to be able to better understand whether our assessment instruments are biased and effective in evaluating Somali children and their development through a culturally sensitive measure. The benefits of this project, we believe, are that the research really will contribute to answering the research question about whether there's a higher prevalence rate of autism in the Somali community, and answering this question will lay the foundation for possible future research regarding autism in the Somali community. Some families involved in this project will get a comprehensive assessment, and the waiting list for comprehensive assessments in our state average between 6 and 9 months for many children, and so the ability to be able to receive a comprehensive assessment for these families is a significant benefit to them. We also feel that we will be able to provide increased community understanding and awareness of autism and its prevalence in the Somali community, and most importantly, build capacity within Minnesota to be able to conduct autism surveillance throughout the state. Right now, we don't have that capacity. Another study I'd like to highlight in less detail is a study that's being conducted by Dr. Michael Georgieff. This study is looking at infants at risk for ASD, and it's an imaging study. Some of the activities are following high-risk infants starting at the ages of 6 months through the age of 2 years, doing behavioral and developmental assessments every 6 months, and brain imaging every 6 months. The purpose of this study is to determine what are some of the at-risk features in these children for developing ASD. Another study I'd like to highlight is something we call the National Core Indicators Project, and this includes a secondary analysis of a very large data set that looks at outcome data at 13,000 randomly selected recipients of home and community-based services throughout 25 states. And we are looking at the characteristics of youth and adults with autism as compared to youth and adults without autism, and outcome areas related to housing, employment, friendships, relationships, inclusion in the community, use of psychotropic drugs, and secondary diagnoses. In addition to a large amount or a growing number of research projects, I think it's important to also share with the committee that the University of Minnesota has a number of projects that are related to training and the development of future researchers who have interest in and can conduct research around autism and autism spectrum disorders. One of these programs we call the LEND program. It doesn't have anything to do with money. It stands for Leadership Education in Neurodevelopmental Disabilities, and it's an interdisciplinary program on campus that involves 13 different academic programs. We provide fellowships and a structured, specialized, focused training in autism and autism spectrum disorders, as well as other neurodevelopmental disabilities, and encourage the fellows in this program to actively participate in research and community and policy leadership projects. We've also been successful in the last year at being able to obtain two grants related to the CDC's campaign called Learn the Signs, Act Early. One is an implementation grant, and the other is to identify a Learn the Signs, Act Early ambassador in Minnesota. Combined, these grants will help to improve early detection and referral to early intervention programs throughout the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I hope that this has provided you with a basic but broad overview of the types of research occurring at the University of Minnesota related to autism and ASD. If you have questions or would like to get any follow-up information, please feel free to call me or contact me. I'll leave my business cards for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have some questions. One thing that maybe you can just answer for me. I've heard that the number of cases of autism is increasing at a kind of an alarming rate. Is that accurate?
If you look at the CDC's prevalence numbers, yes, over the last 10 years, there is certainly a growth in the prevalence. So 1 in 110 is the current prevalence rate, and CDC is to release new data within the next month or two based on their newest surveillance data. So we'll see what those numbers are. But it is growing. There is difference of opinion amongst the research community about why there is that growth.
Representative Dittmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Hewitt. The program started last July, and you're closing in on the end of the study in this June. Where are you at in your? You got three major components. You got the surveillance phase, the clinical review phase, and then the verification phase. Where are you at in the studies and in terms of, are you starting to reap some of the benefits from the studies?
Dr. Hugh?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, thank you for the question. We are in the initial phase, which is the surveillance phase, so you could think of that as a data collection phase, and we won't have findings of the study. Early findings, we suspect, will be the end of 2012.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other members? Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did get to the meeting late, and I apologize for that. And as I look at the study, I knew that some research was being done. Can you tell me if anyone is looking at the difference, the prevalence differences outside of Minneapolis? I understand why you would use Minneapolis as the target, but are we seeing the same difference in other parts of the state in Minnesota, for instance, in Rochester, where I'm from, or some other communities or pockets of communities, or do you not know that at this point?
Dr. Hewitt.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Norton, that's a really good question, and let me first explain why our study is focused on Minneapolis. It's focused on Minneapolis because in 2007, the Minnesota Department of Health did a study that looked at preschoolers in Minneapolis. And this is considered a follow-up study to that. It really came down to time and resource in terms of the limiting our study's focus. We advocated for a statewide surveillance system, and that was not funded. So our study really does focus only on Minnesota. The methods that we're learning and the methods that we're using around surveillance, though, are methods that can be used statewide should we be able to obtain funding for further research.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And do you know if other states are finding similar concerns in this area as Minnesota, and are other states doing research on this as well, or are we kind of alone here?
Dr. Hewitt.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Norton, I'm going to take a leap that your question is asking specifically about prevalence rates in the Somali community.
Yes.
And I'm unaware of any other study in the United States that is specifically focusing on using CDC methodologies to conduct surveillance that will look specifically at the Somali community. There is an emerging body of literature from European countries that has looked at this issue, and certainly anecdotally, we're hearing from other communities where large Somali populations exist that there are similar concerns.
Thank you, and I thank you for your research. It's overdue, in my opinion, and I'm anxious to see your results.
Thank you.
Other members? I'm assuming that in the research you're looking at all aspects, including prenatal, you know, things that the environment that, you know, exists. And that the reason I think of that is when my wife was pregnant with our three, she was not allowed any medication, no aspirins. I mean, you had a headache, you had to suffer through it. They wanted nothing, you know, that could be harmful to the fetus. And I don't know today if that's something that's still done or considered. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm always looking for simple answers to these complex questions. So I guess we'll keep looking, but appreciate you being here. And there are no other questions. I believe we may have time here for Adal, is that your first name? Adal Idol? Okay, that was close. Abdul, would you like to come down for just a couple of minutes? Welcome to the committee, and we will take a few minutes for your input, so go ahead. Identify yourself first for the record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee and staff. My name is Aida Abdul. I have a son with autism, and I'm originally from Somalia. And I really just personally, on the record, want to thank you, Representative Norton, for this and for just being a champion for children with autism. According to Minnesota Department of Education, there are about 14,000 children with autism identified in the education system. And also according to the Health Department, the study that Amy was talking about, American children born to Somali parents, a report that was done in 2009, was found that autism was higher in those children up to 7 times. And for researchers, these statistics should be a golden opportunity to find a cause, a cure, and a prevention, or even which therapy works. Because as a parent, it's a hit and miss. Nobody can tell you what's wrong with your child. Nobody can tell you which therapy that works. We don't have the ADAM surveillance system. We don't have the insurance. We don't have the autism Medicaid waiver in Minnesota. Wisconsin has it. Other states, Ohio has it. California has it. There are other states that are a lot more proactive when it comes to trying to, we don't have an answer, but at least trying to find an answer. And so I'm banking that when Dr. Kaler was being interviewed for the job, he made a statement where he said, I want the University of Minnesota to be one of the best researchers. And he also said that he had a nephew with severe autism. So I'm hoping this will hit somewhere. And I also understand that it's very difficult for a researcher to tell them what to investigate. I know that when I called the School of Public Health, one medical researcher, they told me that there isn't anyone who's renowned as, say, Johns Hopkins or UC Davis or University of North Carolina for autism research. But it doesn't hurt to ask. It doesn't hurt to recruit. It doesn't hurt to get the researchers that are interested. Because here you have a community that autism, if it existed, it wasn't this severe. Somalis were good at one thing, and that's talking, the ability to communicate, and autism took that away from our children. Our kids, it was our hope, they were our dreams, and as many of you are parents, grandparents, uncles, and aunts, there is nothing more painful to be told that something's wrong with your child, yet there's no answer, no therapy works. And you're nodding, Representative Norton, because you've also been a champion for trying to get services for the kids. And so I really beg and plead that the University of Minnesota takes and goes into finding researchers that are interested in this. There is the reauthorization of the Autism Combat Act, which some of you might know, that was authorized by Congress by almost a unanimous vote from Speaker Boehner to President Obama to Eric Cantor to Senator Reid, whom I personally all harassed, to make sure that they voted for, and it passed, and they signed it. And so there are hundreds of millions of dollars available at the National Institute of Health. And when I call and harass again NIH director or NIMH director, they say, you know, we can't make researchers come to us. They have to want to come and apply for the grants. So I really just urge you guys to apply for the grants. You have communities. Minnesota has one of the highest. Forget even the Somalis. We have one of the highest in the country. There are over 14,000 at least counted. Many more are not counted. So every time when you go back to your office, if you can just think about what is the parent of a child with autism feeling. And a study was done where they said it's like being in a combat zone. We don't sleep. Our kids, most of them, don't eat well. They don't sit for a minute. We are tired. We are frustrated. We are sad. You name it, emotion, we got it. So if you could just take that, put that in mind, and imagine if that was your child. And we really just would like that to continue. And I know the health department is, maybe somebody's here, but we also would like the health department to continue the great work. And the reason even this research that Amy was talking about from CDC, NIH, and Autism Speaks was done was because Governor Pawlenty's health administration, Dr. McNann, was extremely proactive. She did the study in 2009. She's the one who laid the groundwork for us to go to NIMH and advocate for this. So we would like Dr. Ellinger to continue that as well. And I, again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. I have a question from Representative Norton.
More just a comment. Thank you for your comments. I appreciate that. And I'm going to put a little plug in. Dr. Shire, who works at Mayo Clinic, has been doing research on a different topic. I think he's been studying hepatitis and a number of others in the Somali community and increased incidence, and very much wants to continue his research on these racial disparities. And maybe we need to find a way to get some of these NIH grants for his continued study in that area or in the area of autism or a combination of those. So I thank you for your comments. And
you're welcome.
And,
thank you.
Hopefully we can work together.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the testimony. It's been, I think, very enlightening, and I think we see the seriousness of it. So thank you
thank
very
you
much.
So much.
At this time on our agenda, we're going to hear from the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic Partnership. Sure. Go ahead. Representative Benson will join you at the table. I think he knows you. Representative Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I know this is not an appropriation year, and we're setting the stage for being able to come back. And I have to say honestly that the first time I saw this presentation about the decade of discovery, I was absolutely awestruck with the potential and the possibilities. The superlatives of game changer, transformational, legacy all come to mind once you see what I think can be accomplished. I want to come back and say thank you for how the partnership was funded in this last budget bill, and that goes a long way in continuing to develop that partnership. This is on top of that, and in addition to that, and I'm going to turn it over to the gentlemen, the doctors that are here today to make this presentation, and I really believe that this does set the stage. We'll be back next year, and hopefully you'll keep us in mind. I'm sure you will once you see the potential for the decade of discovery. If you guys, David Etzweiler, the executive director, is going to go first.
Right.
Great. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much, Representative.
Go ahead and introduce yourself, okay, and then proceed.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, let me begin by thanking you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. The Decade of Discovery, and I'm David Etzweiler. I'm the executive director of the Decade of Discovery. The Decade is a high-powered collaboration that is led by the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic. It is focused on the goal of preventing, optimally treating, and ultimately curing type 1 and type 2 diabetes. The initiative is a project of the Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics, an innovative partnership of research talent and resources founded with the purpose of enhancing and leveraging the research potential of these two world-class institutions. And since its founding, the partnership has become a globally recognized model of collaboration in biomedical research. In 2010, partnership leaders identified diabetes as the research area that offered the greatest promise for a major breakthrough by the state of Minnesota. And they believed then, as we do now, that we can radically improve the health of Minnesotans, dramatically reduce the costs associated and borne by public and private payers in the state and beyond, and affirm Minnesota's position as a leader in health-related economic development. Diabetes, as you know, is a growing epidemic with a devastating health and financial impacts. The United States, and indeed the world more broadly, needs strong leadership to tackle this problem, and Minnesota can and will provide it as we move forward. Our history is filled with accomplishments in diabetes research, and our strengths are innumerable. World-class providers and institutions, a strong public health tradition, active community and patient advocacy organizations, and a biobusiness industry that is the envy of the world. The decade of discovery is joining with and leveraging Minnesota's world-class strengths and assets to conquer diabetes, and we are engaging partners from around the state, including the Department of Health, ICSI, Minnesota Measures, and others. Together, we are identifying ways to prevent diabetes, serve those with the disease, and ultimately find breakthroughs that will lead to cures. The benefits of achieving our goals are significant and wide-ranging, and they include improving public health by transforming the lives of people with diabetes, delivering meaningful savings to our healthcare system and to employers by reining in the substantial and rapidly growing costs associated with diabetes, and finally stimulating economic development in our state, creating new businesses and jobs from our research that further elevates Minnesota's reputation as a leading health center. The state has been a critical partner since this collaboration was established, and the partnership leaders are grateful for the state's commitment. In addition to the annual partnership funding support, we currently have a bill before the House authored by Representative Benson that would provide $1.5 million specifically for the Decade of Discovery this year. You will hear more about the work that is underway through the decade in just a few moments from my colleagues from the Mayo Clinic and the university who are here with me today. And so now let me turn to Dr. Aaron Friedman, Vice President of Health Sciences and Dean of the Medical School at the University of Minnesota.
Dr. Friedman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to share this with you today. I am Aaron Friedman. I'm the Vice President for the Health Sciences and Dean of the Medical School at the University of Minnesota. When the Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics was launched in 2003, it really did begin a new era of collaboration between researchers at the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic. And research is at the core of the partnership and one of the pillars for the decade of discovery. Research efforts are not only focused on the decade's ultimate goal of curing type 1 and type 2 diabetes, but also driving forward near-term objectives of prevention and optimal treatment. And one of the unique aspects of this collaboration between the university and the Mayo Clinic is partnering of researchers from different disciplines. Last December, the decade announced funding for three landmark research projects, all with a different focus on making a difference in the lives of patients living with diabetes. These projects advance work on an artificial pancreas, on developing anti-obesity drugs, and exploring immune-based diabetes treatments. Each of these holds promise for improving the lives in 1 in 10 American adults living with diabetes, and I'd like to focus on just one today, which is the work to further develop an artificial pancreas and deliver insulin based on real-time changes in blood sugars. Mayo Clinic diabetes researchers Yogesh Kudva and Anandu Basu and an engineering professor at the University of Minnesota, Steve Kester, are developing a specialized electronic chip that will radically improve glucose monitoring and provide a critical component to an artificial pancreas under development at the Mayo Clinic. The chip will transmit data wirelessly and function in more locations in the body and last longer than any current sensor. Based on a device concept invented at the University of Minnesota, the new sensor will be more reliable, more stable, and more accurate than anything we have today, and would make an artificial pancreas possible. By advancing the development such as an artificial pancreas, this research project exemplifies how broadly and profoundly the decade of discovery will impact Minnesota, improving the health of Minnesotans with diabetes, reducing the cost to the state and its businesses, and spurring the economic development. The decade of discovery is Minnesota's next milestone in the world-renowned leadership in improving health, both here and around the world. I'd like to turn my colleague from the Mayo Clinic, Bob Rizza, who will share some more exciting developments that improve treatment and prevention. Bob?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you, Dr. Friedman. My name is Bob Rizza. I'm the executive dean for research at the Mayo Clinic, which means I'm responsible for research throughout Mayo. But what I really am is I'm an endocrinologist. I'm a diabetologist. I have for my entire professional career take care of people with diabetes. I have a research lab in diabetes. I've been the president of the American Diabetes Association. Spent a lot of time worrying about diabetes. And I'm just absolutely delighted. And you'll hear about the history that we chose this as the focus, not because of my interest in diabetes. Because, I think you all understand this is a devastating disease. There are 15, 20, 30 people in this room. Odds are overwhelming, at least five or six of us in this room have diabetes. And I almost guarantee you, if you don't have it, your mother, brother, sister, uncle, next door neighbor does. Now, one of the things that's going to be done, and you've read this, is the first thing we're trying to do is develop what's called a map. You see, and you heard this earlier. We were discussing, Representative Norton brought up the issue of disparities. If one in three people in Minnesota have diabetes, one in two in certain minority populations, in Somali populations, African-American populations have disease, this is a problem. But we don't really know where it is. And as you see by this map, so the first thing we're doing is creating a map, and Minnesota Mayo University is saying, well, where is it occurring, what is happening, and what is the severity, not only the disease, but actually the complications. The next thing is that we've had various folks, we had McKinsey, we've taken this very seriously looking through, is that this state, thanks in large part to your foresight, has extraordinary resources. As you've seen in your handout, there are many, many interventions going on in the state, but they're incoherent. They're not organized. They're not directed. In fact, we have all the major health providers, players, academics, communities. Everybody says this is a good idea. But in fact, what's happening is no one has brought together the ability to say, okay, folks, everybody in this state deserves the best care, and we can do that. Now, the other thing about it is that you get diabetes because you secrete insulin, but you don't secrete enough insulin for your body's needs. This is what happens whether it's type 1 or type 2, and I won't go through the details. We are literally tantalizingly, I use that word close, we now finally understand what it is that makes insulin secreting cells in the liver die. Think of that. The reason you get diabetes is because your insulin cells die too fast. If you happen to have the misfortune of having a certain kind of genes, if you change your lifestyle, they start dying faster. They're not born fast enough. We're beginning to understand why. And that's why we're saying prevent. We can prevent this disease. There are proven prevention strategies. Because why do we not have every person in Minnesota, every community, because we're not talking about doctors, we're not talking about the state, we're talking about everybody working to prevent this disease. If you treat it, you don't go blind. You don't die of a heart attack. You don't have renal failure. We only have 40% of the people in our state actually being treated. Think of that. It's embarrassing. And if we do the right research, that's why it says ultimate cure. The reasons why we suspect that, if not cure, we come darn close. And we're not going to do this by ourselves. It's not going to be just Mayo, University of Minnesota. It's going to be the world working together. But we're all Minnesota nice. You don't realize the power, the reputation of diabetes groups here in Minnesota. So that's where we're here today, is to begin this process. And hopefully, we use the word we, that you were part of this we, that we can do this. Not going to be done by itself. It's going to be public policy. It's going to be social. It's going to be communities. It's going to be every state university. It's going to be every school, every system. Because our citizens of Minnesota deserve this. And folks, we're here to begin. It's not going to be easy, but we need your help. See, what's to say? I've actually made it to the stage marker. I've never testified before. So I'm an amateur, but I'm enthusiastic.
You did well.
Thank you.
Very
but
well.
Actually, in all sincerity, and we're saying this because we are here because we fully realize we do not understand how to do this. You know, we're the doctors. We've got a lot of folks involved. You are the ones that set policy. You set school policy. You set community policies. We need your help.
We probably have a few questions to ask.
Sure,
if you're ready. Just a comment. Just in the last 2 weeks, I've heard from two families, one actually related to us, where their very young children have been diagnosed with cancer. One, or not cancer, with diabetes. One, I think, was 4 years old, with type 1 diabetes.
Right.
I can't imagine anything worse for a family to deal with, because that young child does not know what's going on. Yet they have to deal with it every day. So, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and testifiers. It's exciting. You know, I coached for many years in wrestling, and I know one of my top wrestlers was diabetic, and he had the pump, and he'd come into practice, and he'd take it off, and maybe during the middle of practice, he had to run down and get a piece of candy or whatever, and he was probably he was a state champion also, and. He's probably knew more about nutrition than anybody else on the team, and he went on, you know, get a college education, everything. But the research is fantastic. My mother had later onset diabetes. In fact, she had polio when she was a child, the same time as President Roosevelt. And I have a real interest, you know, in this disease, and I've been able to coach athletes that have come through with their families and so forth. Your artificial pancreas, could you kind of explain a little bit more about how that research goes?
Sure. Man, just to show how old I am, I'm actually one of the people who helped develop insulin pumps around the world. It actually happened in Minnesota. There were about group, and it was the usual thing in life. Mayo, Yale, group in England, group in Canada, we all more or less same idea. You know, every time you say that, I smile. You know, because, I mean, you have to understand, but the problem with pumps, what they do is they infuse insulin, but they don't know the concentration. So we went through this many times, and actually Dr. Kuva, Dr. Beller, or my previous fellows. I mean, so we've been doing this for a long time. You don't know how much insulin to give. But what Yogesh and Andy are doing with our college of University of Minnesota, developing a sensor. So if you continuously can sense what the blood sugar is, then you can change the infusion rates of insulin appropriately. Can't do that now. What you got to do is check your blood sugar, push the amount of insulin, and we can make some pretty good guesses. So it's a game changer. And frankly, is one of those things that, you know, it's not to cure, but it will change the lives. After all, the person you coach is not a diabetic. It's a person with diabetes. You know, and the idea is to get this disease so they could live with this and live a normal life. So it's continuous monitoring, measure the blood sugar, using computer technology to deliver rights men insulin. Can be done.
Mr. Chairman, could I
yes.
add, Mr. Chairman and committee, the key difference is the ability to look closer and closer like what the body does itself. And that's what the sensor's point is. This is continuously sensing blood glucoses, not a measurement every 2 or 4 or 6 hours, and thereby delivering small amounts of insulin over an extended period of time, just like the body.
Exactly.
I had heard recently of a pump that had also failed, and the individual didn't realize it. So there's risks. There's nothing at this
right.
point that's
absolutely
trouble-free
right.
or perfect. So, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here. It's exciting, and I always appreciate your enthusiasm for what you do. It's catching. I guess research is key, and the Genomics Partnership was one small effort in starting that partnership, and I know Representative Benson carried the bill. I carried it for 4 years, and I think Representative Bradley before me here in the House. So it's been a labor of love for all of us to be able to you know, raise the issue statewide and get the support that we need. And I know you're going to be you have a small ask right now, but I know your project is quite large, and that you really haven't. I don't think I heard the number, but it's big that right. you're going to be looking at. And I guess because I serve here on higher ed, and I've struggled with the cuts that we've made and trying to fight for the continued research funds, I guess I'm asking that the University of Minnesota continue to share with us the enthusiasm and the need for research and protect very strongly the research program and the cuts to the partnership and the cuts to research at the university moving ahead. It's been a bit of a, I think, a struggle for many of us when we say don't cut it and it gets cut anyway, and I understand the internal politics of the university and they want to treat everyone equally and some of that, but particularly in this bioscience industry and in healthcare, which is Minnesota's strength, it is our niche that we need to protect it beyond, it maybe needs to raise to a higher bar than we've been holding it in recent years. So I guess I'm just, you know, I know you haven't had complete control over this. I guess I'm just asking you to please help us continue to support you by keeping cuts away from research. You know, work hard at that, please.
Representative Morrill.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Erce, I think my question is going to be for you. I want to thank you first for all the work that you all are doing. I'm looking at the page right here that says looking for collaborators.
Right.
So I thought, okay, well, I'll type in to find out, you know, on the iPhone. The iPhone will answer everything. And I read about the statewide health improvement program
right.
in Minnesota. The program aims to reduce health care costs by reducing the percentage of Minnesotans who are overweight or obese and or who use tobacco right. products. And it goes on. Right. Is the statewide health improvement program or SHIP program a potential collaborator with you?
Absolutely. So last week, you know, I mean, I'm getting very good at driving back and forth between Rochester and Minnesota. So last week, David brought in the FSG group, along with McKinsey, and actually it's the Minnesota Department of Health hosted this group. And what the Minnesota Department of Health did is just what you just said. All of the major, not all of them, but the vast majority of the major groups in the state, you know, and again, saying the decade discovery, you know, we're not going to drive this. We're the catalyst. So that group and the other groups involved is saying, how can, that's actually what this intervention is about. How can you actually assess who's doing what? But remember, folks, the important thing isn't who's doing what, like SHIP, a wonderful group. You know, but does it work? You know, and does it work as well in population X, Y? And you see, and Minnesota Department of Health would drive that. In fact, as far as we're concerned, we would be delighted, you know, to be helping. Because for the research part will overwhelmingly be born in the University of Mayo side. The healthcare delivery part, almost certainly overwhelmingly part on exactly these kinds of organizations. So the answer is in the process, you know, and frankly, I couldn't tell you where SHIP is because they had about 20 people in the room, but it's exactly that kind of mindset to bring all these around.
Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just add additional testimony as well. The meeting that Dr. Erce is referring to is one that was really convened by the Minnesota Department of Health. And I should say that I've been on the job now, I think, 75 days. I'm still
doing a great job.
But they were very kind in opening their doors as I came into this and really brought us in and asked us to serve almost in a co-hosting ability there. And in so doing, we brought in a group called FSG, which I've actually had pretty substantial experience with over the last 5 years in my work. And this was an opportunity to bring together some core players around the state of Minnesota. Again, diabetes was chosen not just because of the expertise of these two world-class institutions. It was a recognition that as a community of providers, community partners, patient associations, companies here, that we had something to offer the world. And that morning meeting in particular, they were here for a full day of meetings, was really an opportunity to bring folks together and talk about a broader vision for identifying what that heat map looks like. And we were very candid in that conversation about saying, if there are opportunities for us to lead as world-class institutions, we're here. If it's a supporting role, we're here, a catalyst role. The key is that we come together and figure out where the interventions are that we can replicate and scale and demonstrate improved health, reduced costs, and economic development in the state. And I will say, as somebody who has been around these kinds of community interventions for years, overcoming that inertia and that question when you go to those meetings of, will this one actually move? Do I really want to be a part of it? We've already had a follow-up phone call. We've got FSG coming in through grant dollars from the CDC that the MDH is receiving, and folks are ready to move. So it's an exciting time in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that explanation. In part, there's an ongoing theme here at the legislature, at least from my point of view, about the crossover in committee. So I would ask members to think about SHIP funding, because SHIP funding is, I think, of essential importance to Minnesota. But here's a place where higher ed also could be collaborating with folks, but that budget line's in another committee. So I think this is just one opportunity to talk about how invaluable SHIP is.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and doctors. I'm sorry I had some constituents down, so I just caught you, Dr. Etzwiller, is that? Or which one? You?
Dr. Rizzo.
I'm Dr. Rizzo. Rizzo, okay.
Mr. Etzwiller.
Etzwiller, yes. Well, Dr. Rizzo, I got to tell you, you know, not all of us are Minnesota nice. Let's get that on the table right now. I'm from the Iron Range, you know.
I'm from the East Coast.
There you go. We're like you. So I want to ask you this. I'm half Italian, too, by the way. So, yes. So, you know, we gave money here. Representative Norton was very insistent that the biogenomics project get money in the base, and I don't know, we've cut it since then, but I think it was around $7 million a year. I'm not sure. Thank you. And, you know, so the taxpayers have an investment in what you're doing along with the Mayo, and, you know, we get to the point where we maybe discover a cure or a better way to treat diabetes, and then in comes, you know, corporate America, and then they get involved and they help out, and then all of a sudden you get a great product. But a lot of the taxpayers in Minnesota that helped it in the first place can't afford the new product once it goes on the market. How do we balance that? Is there a way, and I've asked at the university, and it's difficult, that somehow we get a better piece of the pie, maybe, that we can take care of the people that need to use the product you developed but can't afford it?
Right. Who wants to answer that question?
I'll take a shot. So, you know, Dr. Mr. Chairman, you know, I agree with you completely. Remember where I work. Yeah, I'm not from here. I'm from Florida. I grew up in Florida, East Coast.
Wow. I thought I was crazy, and you moved to Minnesota with that.
But I love it here, and the reason why I love it here is I mean, I can work any place I want to work. You know, the reason I'm here is because I and the people within my work, including these folks, including you, have committed to say, how do you improve the lives of people? And that doesn't mean invent something and charge them and send off. We're not going to do that. See, the fundamental part of this, you know, as they say, is, you know, discover, translate, apply. Even taking the information we know now, the cost-effective information, we can change people's lives. We're just simply not doing it. You know, if we invent things, for example, you know, like this insulin pump, that's a product worth, the implications of that, I think, are overwhelming. We pulled that off. But those dollars, you know, since the state will have part of that, can be used then to feed back into providing the care for just exactly the things we're doing. And that is the mindset all the way across the line. It does not do anybody, well, it might do some, it doesn't do what I want to do or what you want to do any good to develop high-priced products that nobody can use. The game here is to provide things that change people's lives. If we make a profit at that, we should use that profit to reinvest into the decade of discovery. Now, I won't go into politics, but I mean, obviously, you got to have the money to have the mission. So if corporate America wants to come in, fine, as long as we know how to play the game. And I think that's actually what this is all about. But the problem will be, if we do not do it, you know, and we can't do it without your help, we're going to pay somebody else, because somebody else will get it, and they're going to come in, they're not going to have the same approach. Because I'm convinced, you know, and you all know this, Minnesota is a very strange state. We actually have the sociology, we have the infrastructure, we have got the capacity to do this. I mean, I was at Yale yesterday. Nobody else has got it. They're competing with each other. You know, so the idea is take capitalism, make it work for us, and reinvest it in the state of Minnesota. That's what we've always done.
Mr. Chair, and that's a very good
Representative
answer.
Rukavina.
It's the Italian in you, you know.
But it's true.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Friedman?
Yes, if I could just add to Bob's point. That's Bob and I have had the opportunity, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Bob and I have had the opportunity to present in a number of places, and it's usually my job to add a little bit more to what Bob says. And and in this case, there is one other thing that I think is important to recognize. We have a commitment to looking for a cure. That is not a unique position for either the University of Minnesota or for the Mayo Clinic. That's what we do. And it's an important part of what we do, but it's not the only part of what we do. And as Bob pointed out earlier, we know we can do better in prevention. We know we can do better in treatment with what we have today.
Right.
And so part of this partnership has to be to bring to bear to many, many more citizens in the state of Minnesota what we can do well today. And that is an important piece of this, so that it's not just hang with us for 20 years till one of these cures comes along. Let's make a difference even sooner. And we can do that as well.
Representative Dittmer.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. You know, there isn't a day that goes by you watch commercials on television, these companies that have the new ways of injecting the insulin, and it can be delivered right at your doorstep and so forth. It's probably a pretty big business. And do you get support from these companies?
Who would like to answer that?
I'll do it. You do it.
All right. I'll jump into it since I'm my 13 years preceding, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my 13 years preceding coming in on board were at Medtronic. And Medtronic, as you may know, has a large presence in the diabetes market here. So we do have a representative from Medtronic on board right now, as well as a representative from General Mills on the Oversight Committee. And certainly part of the reason that was transmitted to me in the hiring process about why my leadership might be interesting to the partnership comes right out of the questions that you all are asking today, which is this has to be a broader collection. This has to be a larger group of folks who are coming together from across the sectors. So right now we've got support that's coming in the form of Oversight Committee, but we are well aware of the fact, and in fact this is really where my career has been before this, of what those partnerships can look like when they are done well between corporate America, academic institutions, patient advocacy organizations, and being able to map out and have that conversation about how we serve people better and protect the interests of the citizens of the state of Minnesota is a big part of where we're going now and in the future.
Chairman, can I have a follow-up comment?
Go ahead. Can I have a comment, Dr. Rizzo?
So, you know, Representative, your key point. I'm not famous, but I'm modestly well-known. You know, I've been on virtually every advisory board for every major company and board of diabetes. You know, and the key thing they keep asking, are you serious? Is the state of Minnesota serious? Because, in fact, if we indeed can begin, we can start beginning in this private investment, because they're all waiting to see if we're serious. Frankly, I shouldn't say this. I'm less concerned about the money from this committee than the commitment. Because, you see, if the state of Minnesota is actually committed to doing this, then we can begin in bringing all these private industry in. But they're waiting to see, because everybody has a grand vision, but is the state of Minnesota serious? And that's why we're here today.
Representative Dittmer?
Well, yes, I think knowing, you know, with the Mayo Clinic and the different doctors that we have doing research and so forth, they should be aware that we're serious about diabetes. And my question was, is there monetary support there from these companies for this research? I know Representative Norton and I co-chair the Childhood Obesity Working Group, and we know that childhood obesity is one of the big components of this disease too. And so is there financial support there from these companies?
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, Representative, the direct answer to your question is no at this point. And that is incumbent upon me to do that over the next 12 to 18 months. So we are now actively involved. Again, I've been on board for just over 2 months. We're actively involved in a process with the help of McKinsey & Company, who's providing pro bono assistance to us in driving a business case that makes very clear what our path and our strategies are across prevention, treatment, and cure. And a huge part of the driver of this is the answer to your question. The resources here, we hope, we are counting on the support of the state, but we are not counting on that exclusively. Right. To be successful, this will draw on the resources of the private sector, the nonprofit sector, and we will have a plan that prioritizes and determines what the best return on investment is for folks.
And Mr. Chair, if I could add to that. So what I'm hearing you say is that a commitment from the legislature, maybe starting with this committee, verbally, and also at least finances, is a way to start telling those corporations that Minnesota is serious, that the decade discovery is more than a philosophy, and that it's safe and wise, in fact, for them to invest. Am I getting that correct?
You are.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, I thank you very much for the presentation, and I guess you've given us a lot of confidence that we're moving in the right direction, and with your expertise and desire and everything else, I'm feeling pretty optimistic right now. And Representative Benson, thank you for arranging for this presentation. Do you have any final comments?
No, Mr. Chairman, thank you. It was my pleasure to be able to bring this. Like I said, I saw it a couple of months ago, maybe even longer than that, and it hasn't left me in terms of the potential here to change lives in Minnesota, not just in Minnesota, but around the world. So this next decade can make a big difference, and it starts with us, and potentially next year when we have these deliberations about what we think we can do as a legislature in Minnesota. Thank you.
And we'll maybe bring you back next year when we get down to the finance part of this whole process. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, members, we are adjourned.